Season 2 of Love in Context podcast welcomes you. Get ready for engaging, unscripted conversations with your hosts, Ben and Spencer. Our mission remains unchanged: to explore the Bible through the powerful lens of love.
In this new season, we'll embark on a journey together, unearthing fresh insights and gaining deeper understanding of how we can love God and live out our faith in practical ways.
So let's dive into this season of Love in Context, where love and the context of the Bible intersect to transform our lives.
Welcome back, podcast, Love and Context. I said that in like, it was like a Yoda version.
Mm-hmm. With a very horrible impression of his voice.
Yeah, no, that was a perfect Yoda. Have you heard my Chewbacca? Hi, Spencer, how are you?
Disney, if you're looking for a replacement voice actor, we found a candidate for you.
Yeah.
So,
Kings and Kingdoms, week number 4.
Yeah, let's go. If you are with us today,
what do you mean if they're with us today? They're literally watching the video or listening if you're with us today.
So if you're listening today, I'm tired. Okay. Yeah. I just want to let you all know this. Yeah. I'm tired. I haven't got much sleep lately.
Well, I will say, if you are watching, you'll notice that Spencer cut off a lot of his beard, and his wakefulness was actually in his beard. So when he cut it off, he got much more sleepy.
Yes, 100%. So we're going to be talking about Nebuchadnezzar today.
Nebuchadnezzar.
Yeah, so there's some references
good old
throughout
Nebby.
The Bible, but really, Daniel's probably the place you're going to want to hang out with.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then, so before we jump into this, just a reminder of where we are in the series. We're talking about the non-Israelite kings and their impact on culture, their impact on the Bible, the impact on the world around them, and how God was working in and amongst that area.
Yeah.
Amongst that area. Mm-hmm. I forgot the G on that.
And you'll notice as we go further and further into the series that you might be listening and be like, wow, they keep pulling up more and more cultural context for each king the further and further they go. There's a reason for that.
Yeah.
It's actually really simple. The further back you go in time, the less written record we have about stuff.
Correct.
And so you might hear us reference some different cultural context, contextual pieces for these kings moving forward. And that's just how it is.
Yeah. In a few weeks, we're going to be on like Herod the Great and Caesar Augustus. And there's
so much.
There's so much information. I wouldn't even be surprised if those episodes are a little bit longer.
About 4 hours long.
Yeah. we're not going to do a 4-hour episode. Yeah. Somebody would listen.
Somebody would.
There is, by the way, if you're the listener, like, just welcome. But there is a listener that we have in Singapore that has listened to every episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's great.
I don't know who it is, but welcome. We love that you're here.
Yeah.
All right. So let's jump into Nebuchadnezzar's life. So as far as time period, we're looking at about 605 to 562 BCE. Mm-hmm. That's before the common era.
It's going to be a good episode, I can tell.
It's going to be a good episode already. And Nebuchadnezzar is known historically, like beyond how he's known in the Bible. Mm-hmm. He's known for a couple of things. He's known for his military conquest, his architectural achievements. Mm-hmm. That's different than archaeological. Mm-hmm. And then the third is actually his role in Jewish history. Mm-hmm. So I want to touch briefly on some things historically, talk about his architectural achievements. Mm-hmm. He had these massive building projects. The two that have survived, right? Because there were others, but these are the two that have survived. There's the Ishtar Gate and the Hanging Gardens. Now, if you've heard Hanging Gardens before, you know that's actually one of the seven wonders of the modern world, right? Or ancient world. Mm-hmm. And they symbolized, like, yes, innovation, but there were so much about wealth, sophistication of Babylonian culture, being like, hey, we can do this better than anybody else can.
Well, and the Hanging Gardens were also in a desert wasteland, right? Like, the city that they were in was surrounded by nothing. So you
Correct.
Had Nebuchadnezzar being like, I can do anything I want.
Yeah.
It basically is a power status. He's basically claiming that he's on the same level as a god.
Yeah, and I mean, if you need to think of a modern example, think about Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. It's literally in the middle of the desert, and there's no reason a city should be there. Mm-hmm. And they're just like, we're going to make it happen. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we're going to have a city. We're going to have a city, like a thriving city. Mm-hmm. Now it has a football team, right? And it's
not a thriving football team.
Yeah, not a thriving football team. But you step outside of the city, and you're reminded almost immediately, oh, yeah, we're in a desert.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're real hot.
Yeah. Yeah.
So beyond that, there was the, like I said, the Ishtar Gate, the Hanging Gardens, and there's a number of places that you can actually see some of his achievements. There's a thing called a cuneiform. Basically an ancient tablet, but there's inscriptions that detailing his victories and his various building projects. And so while they can't always find all the building projects because time, right? And conquest and, you know, all those different things that happen over the, man, I'm getting a ton of emails. I mean, yeah. All right. I'm going to have to, all the conquests and all the things that happen over time. There is a list of a bunch of different things that he is said to have done, and it would just radically shaped the world. So to Spencer's point, like you said, he's like, hey, I'm like God. I can just turn the world into whatever I want to do, which is very common with dictators.
Yes.
Right. With kings that are like the conquest kings. We're going to see this a lot with Nebuchadnezzar. We're going to see it again with Darius. We're going to see it with Ahasuerus. You're definitely going to see it with Caesar Augustus. Right. Like this whole like status piece.
Yeah.
On the military side of things, he greatly expanded Babylon's territory. I mean, they became one of the most powerful empires of the Near East. It included Judah, Syria, parts of Egypt, and it established Babylon as a dominant political force. And then beyond that, he started to establish alliances and vassal states. Now, we've talked about vassals in the past when we were talking about covenants, right? But essentially what a vassal is it's a state that's run independently. You pay tribute to, if you have a country and let's just call it Spencerstan, that's a great name for it. It's Spencerstan, and he is a vassal of Babylon. He says, Babylon says, I will send you X amount of my exports every year in tribute. But if I get invaded by one of my neighboring countries, you're going to come and back me up.
Yeah.
And so while you're technically free and you haven't been placed subservient, you're basically a servant of the more powerful nation.
It's the equivalent of being in like Army Reserve or something like that.
Yeah.
Right.
And now it's good for these countries because one, they don't get run roughshod over, and like Babylon could have just wiped them out completely. But the other piece is now they actually have this protection because they're paying tribute. They're paying their subscription fee. to Babylonian army, that if somebody comes in and tries to challenge them or tries to wipe them out in another country, Babylon will step in and say, "Nope, these are our guys." Right. So that's a very different move, by the way, at this time of warfare, because it was about controlling the territory. But like Babylon is now like, "Hey, we're going to take some of your supplies, but then we'll back you up with our might." Where they're going to let these people continue to be independent, but really they're underneath their thumb. Like that's just a shift in military. Warfare.
Now, the Babylonians, they actually were one of the first nations to really try diplomacy. And this was like kind of the method they were did it through. Was like, hey, like a little bit of barter trade, and you're going to back us up, we'll give you this, so on and so forth.
Well, and because of that, you have a lot of like cultural intermingling going on, right? So you have people, the conquered people, blending traditions, languages, religious practices. It starts to really just shift and change like the art that's being created, the literature that's being written, and the philosophy of the ancient world, right? And Babylon actually specifically became like the center for like knowledge too. Like they started having libraries and scholarship and preserving advanced knowledge, specifically three areas, astronomy, mathematics, and literature, which isn't surprising if you're actually going to be involved in a lot of building. That those would be the big ones. And so you're having this massive shift. Like to your point, why don't we have these things with like Necho the Second and like the previous people we've talked about? They weren't writing things down like that. Like there's no printing press. There's no established process to write these things down. And it's also a lot longer ago. So things sometimes survive and sometimes they don't.
And so Babylon, they really kind of operated in a little bit of a different way. The other thing to mention with them, going back to like military conquest, they were brutal in their war tactics. Like they had a diplomacy about them, but when they're like, "Yeah, we're done. We're going to take you out," they were ruthless. They did a lot of siege warfare. So instead of just going in and wiping the city out, which they actually had the power to do, they're like, "No, we're going to starve them out and torture them."
You get a real like step up of Assyrian vibe.
They took what the Assyrians were doing, and like, we can do this better. And
anything you can do, I can do better.
says the Babylonians to the Assyrians. But when they did the siege on Jerusalem, mm-hmm. like it was a siege that lasted a long time.
Yeah.
It lasted, I think it was years.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was not a short one.
No. And they basically starved the city out into submission.
And one of the things we haven't necessarily talked about these, but a lot of times like these cities that are being Jerusalem and different mm-hmm. cities that are being like where they're being put
yeah.
in the ancient Near East is because they're actually near a water source of some sort.
Yeah.
So to actually starve out and like a city mm-hmm. under siege takes a while because you actually a lot of times inside the city walls will have food and mm-hmm. you'll have water and you'll have protection. And so you have to have mm-hmm. great supply lines and different things to be able to actually siege that place.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a growing modernization of warfare.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And, but the brutality isn't getting any less brutal. Mm-hmm. It's still brutal.
Yeah. One of Babylon's key things was cut off the water.
Yeah.
Like when they would go into a place to lay siege to it, they would actually go set up camp around the water supply. So they would have all the water they need,
mm-hmm.
but they would also cut off the supply to the rest of the city.
Right.
And yeah, if you don't have water, you don't have food, you're not going to last forever.
Yeah. A couple of places you can actually read about Nebuchadnezzar mm-hmm. specifically is in the Babylonian Chronicles and then, of course, in the Hebrew Bible, which we're going to be talking about yeah. Today. But those are some of the places that you can actually read about him historically. And then, of course, the geological evidence, archaeological mm-hmm. evidence of him himself.
Mm-hmm.
So the let me grab my Bible here.
Mm-hmm.
So in the Hebrew scriptures, though, the place that he is most prominently talked about is actually in the book of Daniel.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're gonna turn to Daniel. So if you have not been in Daniel in a while, why don't you just pause and flip over there with us so that you can read it as well.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go ahead and look here in the beginning of chapter 1 in Daniel. It says here, in the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah. Now, we remember Jehoiakim because that was mm-hmm. Necho II.
Mm-hmm.
Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord delivered Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand, along with some of the articles from the temple of God. These he carried off to the temple of his God in Babylonia and put in the treasure house of his God. Okay. So this is at the end of Necho II, Babylon has come in and attacked Egypt. Now they've come into Jerusalem, and they actually are taking over Jerusalem and getting ready to take over the southern kingdom overall.
Yes.
Right. So this is Jehoiakim, who was actually reappointed by Necho II, mm-hmm. which, by the way, I'm just saying this to connect you to last week's episode. Mm-hmm. So now we're being introduced in this book of Daniel that this is a book about that's going to be about captivity.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Because this book is Daniel and his friends are being taken out of Israel
mm-hmm.
and they're going to a foreign land and they're going to be serving in their court. And it's going to be how do you remain faithful to Yahweh?
Mm-hmm.
In a foreign land.
Yeah. And if you guys aren't familiar with the story of Daniel, go get familiar with it. We are tackling the side of Nebuchadnezzar today.
Correct.
We're not tackling the Daniel side as much today, which we will still reference it because it's part of the story, right?
Right.
But that's not going to be the focus.
I'm going to recommend the Bible Project overview mm-hmm. of the book of Daniel. They have a lot of really good short clip videos that will help you get the context of what's going on there.
Yeah.
So if you're not familiar with the book of Daniel, I'd recommend going over to the Bible Project mm-hmm. and doing the read scripture on Daniel
mm-hmm.
before you come back and listen to what we're talking about.
So we got to talk about Daniel a little bit,
mm-hmm.
Just so we know where he's at in the story in relation to Nebuchadnezzar. So Daniel was brought to Israel. His name is actually Daniel, and mm-hmm. then they actually changed it to Belshazzar.
Yeah. That's just going to roll off the tongues.
Roll off the tongue.
Yeah. If you're having kids, exactly. just start reoccurring jokes.
Exactly. And then there's a few other prominent players, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego.
Also known in the Hebrew names as Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so Daniel is shown as someone who is faithful to God and gentle in his approach.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like he's not shown as someone who is this mighty warrior. He's not shown as someone who is going to go take over the nations. He is someone who's, I'm going to be faithful to God, lobby so I can follow his decrees and show that he's going to be blessed
mm-hmm.
through his faithfulness to God.
Yeah.
And so what happens is through a series of events, Nebuchadnezzar starts to see this in Daniel.
Yeah, I think in chapter mm-hmm. 1, what you see is when they come to this mm-hmm. thing about the diet, because they want to fatten everybody up to be part of the king's court, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Daniel says, no, we need to actually hold to our our ways, mm-hmm. the Yahweh ways, and God will take care of making us the way we need to be,
mm-hmm.
right? And they start to, in chapter one, you see them starting to trust Daniel's instincts,
yeah,
right? Because Daniel has instincts and his God is in his corner, which then leads into chapter two, which is where Nebuchadnezzar has his dream,
mm-hmm.
right? I think probably it's important to really emphasize, we talked about this a little bit in spiritual gifts, but in the Bible, dreams are much more significant than we treat them today.
Yes.
Yeah. And that was all cultures, like their mm-hmm. dreams, especially dreams like that, like were significant.
Mm-hmm.
And I always think it's crazy that these guys wake up and they remember everything about their dream. Right. Mm-hmm. And I've had a couple of those, and they've always been related to God speaking specifically into my life. Mm-hmm. Right. But most of the time. Yeah,
I've also had times where, like, I've woken up and, like, my wife's been like, man, you must have been having a bad dream. I was like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, I've just, yeah, I've had those times too, right?
So remember what we said. Nebuchadnezzar has been accumulating, systems of knowledge. He's mm-hmm. been accumulating people. He's been accumulating mm-hmm. Wise men and all these different cultural experiences, all these different cultural perspectives. So then he has a dream, and he brings all his smartest guys to come and talk about it,
mm-hmm.
right? And he asks everybody, hey, I need you to interpret my dream. And nobody can,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And even if they could, some of them don't want to take a shot at it just in case they're wrong mm-hmm. because, Nebuchadnezzar, Babylonian king.
Most powerful person in the world.
You don't want to give him wrong information
mm-hmm.
Because that usually it ends up with your head being gone,
mm-hmm.
right?
Which was common practice. Like if you went into a king's court like Nebuchadnezzar and gave misleading information, it was common practice to be like, all right, prison the rest of life or death.
Yeah.
Like one of the two.
Yeah.
So
in the story, Nebuchadnezzar, he's like, man, is there nobody that can give me a solid answer here?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Nobody who can give me a solid answer?
Mm-hmm.
And which point somebody gets wise and they say, hey, you know, there's this guy by the name of Daniel. And maybe they're throwing him under the bus because he's a Jew, right?
Well, may I?
Yeah, go okay, for it.
Great. Great. I personally, like when I read this story, and it wasn't until last couple times I've read it where I was like, oh, his wise men were making a political move so they want to get killed.
Right.
Like they're like, there's this guy who seems to know something. Let's throw him under the bus because he's just a Jewish outsider. So who cares if he gets it wrong and gets killed?
Right.
Right. Like that's on them. That's on him for getting it wrong. And we were just given misinformation. So there is this piece of like their wise men being like, we're going to just throw him under the bus.
Yeah.
And
metaphorical because they didn't have buses, yes. But
we're going to throw him under the chariot.
The chariot.
throw him under something that's going to kill him. Okay.
Yeah.
And we'll let him take the fall for our incompetence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, that's 100%. Well, that's 100% what I feel is going on. Mm-hmm. We can't say it definitively,
no.
But go read the story and see what you think.
That's my interpretation.
So then Daniel gives the interpretation, and I want to read Nebuchadnezzar's response to what Daniel has to say. So it says here, verse 46 of chapter 2, then King Nebuchadnezzar fell prostrate before Daniel. Okay, stop. The king of the most powerful country in the world mm-hmm. just bowed down to Daniel,
who is a Jewish slave.
Jewish slave, okay? And he paid him honor and ordered that an offering and incense be presented to him. Okay, first of all, Daniel probably doesn't want this, but mm-hmm. that's okay. The king said to Daniel, surely your God is the God of gods and the Lord of kings and a reveler of mysteries, for you will be able to reveal this mystery. Then the king placed Daniel in a high position and lavished many gifts on him. He made him ruler over the entire province of Babylon and placed him in charge of all its wise men. Moreover, at Daniel's request, the king appointed Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego ministers over the province of Babylon, while Daniel himself remained at the royal court. Okay. That's going to be important because that has to do with one of the next stories mm-hmm. of King Nebuchadnezzar coming up.
Yeah.
So you've got this ultimate dictator, right? Has this dream. Nobody wants to touch it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? What about this Jewish slave?
Mm-hmm.
Right? We heard he's got some thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And then he comes in, he delivers this interpretation of the dream, and he's like, yep, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
That's it right there, right? And some of us would be like, oh, you know, Daniel's just, you know, putting pieces that would fit, that would, you know, please the... No, that's not what's happening.
What's happening is God is saying, okay, you guys are going to try to, like, this is my interpretation.
Yeah.
There's going to be people who disagree with me. There's lots of actually debate about Daniel chapter 2.
One of the nice things about the Love and Context podcast is you're welcome to disagree with us.
That's Yeah, you have Daniel being thrown under the bus and then God being like, how about I just make fools out of them?
Mm-hmm.
And so through the end of chapter 2, what you see is okay, so you're going to throw my boy Daniel under the bus. Daniel is now going to be your boss, and he's going to appoint 3 more Jewish slaves as administrators for the province.
Yeah. And so, the king bowing down to Daniel, the most powerful person, and then Daniel is actually rising from slave to ruler over an entire province. It feels like I've heard this story before.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like in the book of Genesis, there's a guy by the name of Joseph, and under very similar circumstances, that God does a story. And by the way, you should be connecting this story in Daniel back to the book of Genesis.
Yes.
That is not to say that the story is that the author is he's putting pieces in there to connect you back to this truth back in Genesis. Mm-hmm. That's going to be very common in these books to connect back to Torah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I point that out because I'm actually going to point something else out later that connects back to Genesis as well.
Mm-hmm.
That's very common in the book of Daniel. So then Daniel suggests that, hey, we should appoint Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, right? Or as Pastor Tyler would say it, Abednego. That is an inside joke, and he may or may not listen to this ever, but I love it.
Mm-hmm.
So the next story, literally the next chapter, next verse that's coming in here, is this story that a lot of you are probably familiar with. But that's probably from VeggieTales, the Rakshak and Benny episode where it talks about
which by the way, contextually, they get a lot of stuff wrong. In this one.
So many things.
And
yeah.
So we'll address a little bit of that.
Yeah. Yeah. So there is this decree that now King Nebuchadnezzar, once again, very full of himself, king, right? He makes a image of gold and he says, you know what? I think everybody needs to worship this.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And most people fall in line.
Mm-hmm.
But there's 3 guys who won't fall in line, and it's a problem because they're also very powerful people now because of the previous story.
Mm-hmm.
So he has 3 powerful people who refuse to bow to...
Which is one thing VeggieTales gets wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, one Sorry. Thing. Also, it wasn't a chocolate bunny. So...
Sorry, I'll quit calling VeggieTales out. I love VeggieTales.
Yeah, no, it's made for kids to kind of like... understand like pieces of the story. So
But you have 3 powerful people in his province being like, no, I'm not gonna bow down to that.
Yeah. And so he's like, well, this isn't gonna work, because you really need to understand, like, you need to contextualize who Nebuchadnezzar is.
Mm-hmm.
He is the guy you do not say no to.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got 3 people who say no. By the way, Daniel at this point hasn't said no to Nebuchadnezzar.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure there's something he said no to, but you know, but like, he hasn't said no in the text.
Mm-hmm.
Right. He has given him advice. He at one point has interpreted a dream, but everybody has said yes to Nebuchadnezzar. Now there's 3 people appointed by Daniel, and he says everybody is going to have to bow down and worship this, and they go, no, we're not going to do that. And specifically, I want to point out what they say.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see here.
Well, and while you're looking that up, for the person who's typing on the keyboard being like, well, Daniel's not mentioned in chapter 3, I was like, that doesn't mean he's not present.
Correct.
It just means he's not mentioned. Okay.
All right. So take a look here. He talks to them. He says, is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the image of gold I have set up? Now, when you hear the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, pipe, or all kinds of music, if you are ready to fall down and worship the image I made, very good. But if you do not worship it, you are going to be thrown immediately into a blazing furnace. Then what God will be able to rescue you from my hand? Now, what is the blazing furnace for? It's probably for consuming sacrifices, right? So in other words, I'm going to sacrifice you to my gods, right? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego replied to him, King Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to defend ourselves before you in this matter. If we are thrown into the blazing furnace, the God we serve is able to deliver us from it, and he will deliver us from your majesty's hand. But even if he does not, we want you to know, your majesty, that we will not serve your gods or worship the image of gold you have set up. So one of the things I always like to point out about these guys and the way they answer, they have absolute trust in God, right? They were slaves. They were elevated to positions of authority.
Yeah.
But their authority is not so important to them that they forget where they come from.
Yeah.
They don't forget their story. And they say, God is perfectly able to do this.
Mm-hmm.
But if he doesn't, I'm still not going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes when we're living in a culture where it is not Christian, right? Yeah. Or living in a place where it's not Christian, and we have difficulty with that statement. It's like, even if it cost me,
mm-hmm.
I'm not going to change what I believe.
Mm-hmm.
I have faith in what God has done in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And so it can cost me everything, and God is perfectly able to see me through the storm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If he doesn't, though, it's not going to change what I believe.
Yeah. So you have Nebuchadnezzar's response to this, which is he's like, it says he was furious and heats the furnace up a lot.
Yeah.
Right? Right? He's like, okay. He's like, so burning you alive is not good enough now. Mm-hmm. We're going to make sure it really hurts.
It's so much that literally people die trying to throw them in the fire.
Yep.
And which, by the way, should show your regard, like Nebuchadnezzar's regard for human life,
mm-hmm.
right? He's like, he's so furious at the people who said no to him
uh-huh.
that he's like, I'm willing to lose people who are loyal
mm-hmm.
to destroy the people who are not loyal to sacrifice them to my gods.
Yeah.
I'll show you.
Yeah. And so you have, then many of you know the story. So then you have, there's a fourth person that shows up in the mm-hmm. fire after Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego get thrown in. And they walk out unscathed.
Yeah.
Right? And then you have Nebuchadnezzar. Let me find it here. I should have.
Before you get there real quick, yeah. While you're looking for that, I want to give people a couple of tidbits because I think it'll be fun for you to research.
Mm-hmm.
There is actually a story in the Mishnah
mm-hmm.
that talks about Abraham being in the fire,
mm-hmm.
in the furnace, as a fourth man. So I just think it's interesting because that is a piece that has been around prior to the book of Daniel being written.
Yeah.
And so this fourth person in the fire is not a new piece. And so I always wonder if there's a little bit of connection back there to some of the oral tradition.
Yeah.
And then later, since you're going to the Bible Project anyways, I'm going to tell you, like, they have a lot of stuff on the Son of Man.
Mm-hmm.
Check out some of those videos because it's going to be really interesting if you track that theme throughout the Bible. And then when Jesus comes as the Son of Man. Mm-hmm. What's actually being said. Yeah. We're not going to talk about it today, but it's really cool, so do check that out.
Yeah. Yeah, so when Nebuchadnezzar sees a fourth man mm-hmm. walking in, he reverts back to his response that he gave Daniel mm-hmm. in chapter 2, and this is verse 26. Nebuchadnezzar then approached the opening to the blazing furnace and shouted, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, servants of the Most High God, mm-hmm. come out, come here. Okay, so you have the guy who was just pronouncing himself as God
mm-hmm.
saying, okay, I can't do that. So you guys who serve the Most High God, I want to see you now.
Yeah.
You have Nebuchadnezzar who just tried to pronounce himself as mm-hmm. God saying, okay, I can't do what your God just did. Your God's the Most High God. And then you jump over to verse 28, and Nebuchadnezzar says, praise be to the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. I feel like we've heard this before already in the book of Daniel, right? Right, where he's already praising mm-hmm. God. Like, you already see this kind of wave of Nebuchadnezzar's life mm-hmm. where he's like, I'm a God. Nope, you're the God. And then, nope, I'm the God. So you kind of see that wave happening here. Who sent an angel and rescued his servants. They trusted him. And defiled the king's command and were willing to give up their lives rather than serve or worship any god except their own god. Now, any god there, interestingly enough, he's referring to himself
because mm-hmm.
that's what he was trying to give them to worship.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, I decree that any person of any nation or language who says anything against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego be cut into pieces and their houses turned into piles of rubble. For no other God can save in this way.
No other God can save in this way.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, you skipped over this verse, but I just want to point out real quick. When they came out of the fire, the satraps, prefects, governors, and royal advisors crowded around them.
Mm-hmm.
So they come out right in the middle
mm-hmm.
of all the most powerful people in the nation.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not a mark on them. The ropes are gone. The guards who threw them in, they're gone. Mm-hmm. And they walk out completely unscathed.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
And by the way, if you're wondering, you're like, hey, you've talked about repeating text before. I wonder if there's a chiasm in Daniel. There is. There's actually multiple chiasms in the book of Daniel. We're not going to get into them today because that's not really the purview of this episode.
Yeah.
But it is a really good place for you to go start looking into.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they walk out into the most powerful crowd in the world, right? The world elites. And Nebuchadnezzar makes this proclamation of like, do not speak ill of their God. And it's really interesting because he's like, oh, praise be to this God. And by the way, if you speak ill of this God, I'm going to do what I just tried to do to them.
Yeah.
Right. So he hasn't had a heart fully turned yet, but he's like recognizing there's this powerful God. Oh, by the way, if you diss him, I'm going to kill you.
Right. Which actually leads us into the next chapter, which is the last place in Daniel that we're going to see Nebuchadnezzar. So Nebuchadnezzar has this dream of this great tree, and ultimately Daniel translates this for him that it's going to be a subsequent humiliation and restoration of what's going on to him. He shares his dream in Daniel, and he explains it. He says so that Nebuchadnezzar is going to be like a wild animal in the field. He's going to eat grass and he's going to be crazy, basically. And then that actually happens, which, by the way, makes you wonder what's going on in the government in Babylon, right? That aside, he comes back and he makes this statement here at the end, written from the perspective of Nebuchadnezzar in verse 34 of chapter 4. He says, at the end of that time, I, Nebuchadnezzar, raised my eyes toward heaven, and my sanity was restored. Then I praised the Most High. I honored and glorified him who lives forever. His dominion is an eternal dominion. His kingdom endures from generation to generation. All the peoples of the earth are regarded as nothing. He does as he pleases with the powers of heaven and the people of the earth. No one can hold back his hand or say to him, what have I done? At the same time that my sanity was restored, my honor and splendor were returned to me for the glory of my kingdom. My advisors and nobles sought me out, and I was restored to my throne and became even greater than before. Now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and exalt and glorify the King of heaven, because everything he does is right, and all his ways are just. And those who walk in pride, he is able to humble. This is quite the story, right? Like it's a crazy story, right?
Yeah.
Because I think even though we've tried to explain how big of a deal Nebuchadnezzar is at this point, he's it, right? Like he is the most powerful human on earth at that point. Like there's nobody else.
Yeah.
And he has this dream, and he starts acting like a wild animal, loses his sanity, and he just disappears. And apparently, nobody goes to look for him because God's going to do what he's going to do. He's going to humble the proud, right? And he brings back Nebuchadnezzar, the most powerful human in the world, and he goes, yeah, I got nothing on God. This guy knows what's going on, right?
Well, you see the story of Nebuchadnezzar, and this is what the history books and archaeological achievement people won't tell you, but you see a story of where first encounter with God, he's like, okay, this God's real, and then he immediately reverts back to his old self. Second encounter, he's like, okay, I'm going to praise this God because he can do stuff I can't do, but by the way, if you diss him, I'm going to cut you into pieces. And then this third encounter, and he probably had more than just these three. This is just what we have written down. This third encounter, he gets to a point where he's like, man, I was at the top of my game. And I got cut down, and the Lord's going to restore me, and I'm going to praise and worship him, give him everything I have. And here's the interesting thing throughout this whole story. Where in this story does the text say God was mad at Nebuchadnezzar?
There's no indication that that's the case.
No. The indication is that you have a God that was seeking him out.
Yeah.
And being very patient and drawing him in.
I'm going to take that idea and poke it a little bit further because I'm going to come into Jeremiah 25. And I want to read something that God says about Nebuchadnezzar through the prophet Jeremiah. Therefore, the Lord Almighty says this, because you have not listened to my words, I will summon all the peoples of the north and my servant, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon. My servant. So Jeremiah, mouthpiece for the Lord, calls Nebuchadnezzar whose servant?
God's
servant. Interesting. And then in chapter 27, he says this of Nebuchadnezzar. He says, now I will give you all your countries into the hands of my servant Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon. I will make even the wild animals subject to him. Okay. Can you remember anywhere in the text where the wild animals were subject to a single human?
I'm being facetious right now.
Yeah.
Was that back in Genesis?
It's back in Genesis.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
In other words, it's almost like he's giving him the mandate of Adam, mm-hmm. right? That he's to rule this area.
Yeah.
And subdue it. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, the immediate thing that you should be in your life, I hear it, right? Mm-hmm. People typing to us is like, but you just said Nebuchadnezzar was brutal and you said that he was, you know, did all these different things.
Yes, he did.
Yes. And God still wanted him.
Mm-hmm.
And God still used him.
Mm-hmm.
And God still worked through his life.
And God still revealed himself to him.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, we have a God who's like, I'm going to show you that no one is beyond redemption.
Well, think back to season one when we were talking about this conflict between God and Pharaoh, when mm-hmm. God is bringing the 10 plagues and he's judging the gods of Egypt, right? Mm-hmm. And there's this interplay where God is pursuing Pharaoh and the people of Egypt mm-hmm. and inviting them to something.
Mm-hmm.
Now, ultimately, they reject it, but God's invitation is still there the entire mm-hmm. time.
Well, some of the Egyptians go.
Some of the Egyptians go, yeah.
Yeah. And so one of the things that I've always loved about this story and I try to pass on to other people is like, don't write off the horrible people,
mm-hmm.
right? The Lord wants to reach them and wants to redeem them.
There is a difference between mm-hmm. not appreciating, but not accepting the mm-hmm. actions.
Yeah.
You can absolutely look at the actions. For example, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego say, listen, we're not going to bow,
mm-hmm.
right? I understand you're the most powerful person in the world. I understand you can squish us like a bug. I understand that you can heat that furnace up and try to toss us in.
Uh-huh.
We're still not going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And God's capable of saving us, but if not, we're still not going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
That is standing firm in the midst of chaos.
Yeah.
Right? And so there is a call to be able to do that. But when we're standing against evil,
mm-hmm.
We still need to realize that God is pursuing people.
Mm-hmm.
So make sure you're standing against evil and not the people doing evil.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're going to split hairs there, and I understand, but God is still passionate about those people.
Yeah, you just have to be able to distinguish between the people and actions, mm-hmm. right? Because people can be redeemed.
People can be redeemed.
Right? Through the power of Christ, people can be redeemed.
And you have to think, like, in your brain, listeners, I want you to just think about that person who just can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
God loves that person.
Mm-hmm.
As much as he loves you.
Mm-hmm.
And he feels about that person the same way that he feels about you.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're going to be followers of Jesus, we have to figure out a way to feel, not necessarily the same way, because I think it's going to be hard, but at least to live in such a way that we want to feel that way
mm-hmm.
toward the people that have completely wronged us.
Yeah.
What we're not saying is that the wrong is okay.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean that it didn't hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean that it's not going to take time to get over. But God is a God of redemption. He's a God of restoration.
Mm-hmm.
He's a God of putting the broken back together.
Yes.
And that's the call of the Christian community, even in the midst of a tyrannical government like Babylon.
Mm-hmm.
If we live like Daniel and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, we say, how do we live in the middle of a world where we're the remnant?
Yeah.
And we stand completely firm in the middle of a lot of things that are against us.
Mm-hmm.
But we do so in love and compassion, but with unwillingness to compromise our faith.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really hard.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's super hard.
Mm-hmm. Well, and if we're just being honest, it's really easy to be selfish when we see that quote-unquote horrible person that we despise be redeemed. It can be a really hard thing because in our selfish nature, we don't want to see that.
Right.
Right? Like, and so when Nebuchadnezzar, like, returns to power and he's like, I am following after the Lord, it was probably a shock to some people.
Yeah.
And there's probably some people who he really harmed that they're like, we don't want to see him as a good person now.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, think about the countries that he literally carted off into slavery, right?
And I mean, take that concept and you could tie that to the one person that the Lord redeemed that you know that was a horrible person before. And you're like, I don't want to see them redeemed. Mm-hmm. And there's a heart check you got to do, right? Like mm-hmm. you got to check your heart and be like, no, the Lord loves them just as much as he loves me, just as he redeemed me, right? He wants to redeem them or he's redeemed them.
One of the things that they, so one show that I've recommended mm-hmm. multiple times is called The Chosen. I think that it does a really good job of helping you think about stories in a different light or think of them as real stories rather than just text on a page, right? Mm-hmm. But one of the things that I had enjoyed about that is there's this ongoing conflict of the disciples struggling with Matthew, the tax collector. Mm-hmm. You know, this guy who was, like Jesus calls him. But he was the guy who literally exacted taxes from you on behalf of a foreign government mm-hmm. and lined his pocket at the same time. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of, like, I mean, you see the Pharisees are like, he eats with tax collectors and sinners. Like, they're so bad you can't even list them with sinners, you know? Uh-huh. And yet Jesus calls one of them to be a follower of his. Mm-hmm. And they leave everything to go do that.
Yeah.
Like, those people who are on the outside are the people that God wants. Mm-hmm. And it's a really difficult thing. The last thing I would say here is we've kind of emphasized Nebuchadnezzar is one of the most powerful people, probably the most powerful person in the world at that point. Mm-hmm. I think that there is a tendency when we read this story, specifically in America, to see ourselves as the remnant. I think that we need to be honest is that we actually exist in a much stronger position of power mm-hmm. than most people in the world. Mm-hmm. Think about technology and authority and all these different things. And we are going to, the story, when we read it, I think there's a good question to ask yourself is, with the power that's been entrusted to me by God,
yeah,
am I using it to promote justice and love, compassion, forwarding the kingdom of mm-hmm. God, or am I building golden castles for myself to worship?
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's a good question for you to ask. Mm-hmm. Like it can be humbling at times. And sometimes you'll be like, nope, I'm doing good job. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you're like, whew, missed it mm-hmm. with that one. Mm-hmm. But, when we're born into America, we're born into a lot of, power and authority mm-hmm. and what we do with that matters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Kings and kingdoms.
Well, if you enjoyed it,
keep listening.
And tune in next week.
If you didn't enjoy it, you probably didn't hear this message at the end.
Yep, probably not.
Have a good one.
And that's a wrap for today's episode of Love and Context. We hope you enjoyed this engaging conversation and gained valuable insights into the powerful message of love within the Bible.
We'd love to hear from you and continue the conversation. Connect with us by sending us your questions, thoughts, and suggestions to loveandcontext@gmail.com. We greatly appreciate your feedback and ideas for future episodes.
Stay connected with us on social media for updates, behind-the-scenes content, and additional resources. You can find us on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and Facebook at Love and Context. Don't forget to hit that follow button to stay up to date with the latest episodes and join our growing community.
Thank you for being part of the Love and Context family. Remember, love is at the heart of it all. Until next time, keep seeking wisdom, embracing love, and living out your faith in the context of today's world.